In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Sorry, just give me a moment. So, now is the first of the evening Paschas. And you'll find generally that the evening Paschas, they'll always focus on one event, one central event. There'll be a process of events where Christ is moving towards his passion. He's moving towards his Pascha. And it's very important for us to know that every time we come and gather, there's a movement towards that moment. There's a movement towards that point, that crucifixion, that sacrifice. And so every step has something to tell us. Every step is revealing for us. And today's one is very, very simple. Who do men say that I am? So Christ goes to Caesarea Philippi. When he's there, he sits down with his disciples. And when he sits, he asks them a very central question. It's actually the central question of the entire Gospels. Who do men say that I am? And then his disciples responded. Some say John, some say Elijah, some say one of the prophets. But then he turns and he looks at them all. And you can imagine him looking at every single one of them in the eye, straight in the eye. In the same way that he looks at every one of us, straight in the eye. But what about you? He asked. Who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? And that's the question that Christ asks us tonight at the beginning of the Pascha. Who do you say that I am? Who am I to you? Not what have you heard of me? Not what have you heard the priest say of me? Not what have you heard your friends say of me? Not what have you heard of your parents say to me? Of the Sunday school teacher say to me? What have you got to say? Who do you say that I am? Who do you specifically, looking us in the eye, who do you say that I am? And there is no more important question than this in our entire lives. And there's no more important question than this in the Gospels. And St. Peter replies, you are the Christ. You are the Messiah. Now, we should recall that when he says this, Christ is not Jesus' last name. Okay, it's not his surname. Okay, Christ is a very specific title. The Christ, the Messiah, Pi Echristos, El Messiah. It's a title. He's the Redeemer. He's the one that comes to redeem humanity, the one that Israel has been waiting for, begging for, the one that will come and restore things, put things to right, deal with sin, deal with oppression, deal with the fact that we've been oppressed by the Romans, by the Babylonians, by the Seleucids, by the Assyrians, by the Assyrians. The one that will come to redeem Israel. The one that comes not only to redeem, but to bring God's kingdom to earth. To bring God's kingdom, God's presence to Israel. And so this forms the center point, the center of the Gospels. In Jewish literature, you often find that the way they write, the way that they would create their works, the center would always be, or the most important point would always be at the center. And so that's exactly what we find here at Mark 8, 29-30. It's the center of the entire Gospels. It's the most important question of the entire Gospels. That's how the Jews used to write. And actually, if you look at the Gospel of Mark, it's divided into two parts structurally. Before this question and after this question. And so this point, this question, acts as like a transition point. It transforms. It creates change in the disciples. Likewise for us that are sitting here today, hearing that question and how we answer that question stands to be a transition in our lives, to be a transformation of our lives. So let's look what happens before this point. The disciples and the crowds before this point, both of them, disciples and crowds, were astonished beyond measure every time Jesus did something supernatural. Every time he performed a miracle, it says, the crowds, at least in the Gospel of Mark, the crowds and the disciples were astonished beyond measure. Every time Jesus said something remarkable, the crowds and the disciples were astonished beyond measure. But after this point, their reactions start to diverge. The crowds continue to be shocked. But the disciples now, they don't have that reaction of shock anymore. Their reaction starts to turn to that of fear because they realize who this is that stands before them. Before this transition point, the disciples were, in a word, confused. They got confused about everything. They misunderstood the parables. They didn't understand when Jesus said he was doing the feeding miracles. Every time Jesus mentioned the leaven of the Pharisees, they got confused and thought he was talking about food. When he said, I need to eat, I'm hungry, they thought he was talking about physical food. So they misunderstood everything Jesus was saying. But after this point where Christ reveals himself as the Messiah of Israel, their misunderstanding no longer has to do with food, no longer to do with parables. Now they start becoming very, very confused about something very important: Christ's suffering, his passion, and the resurrection. So after this point, the disciples are changed. They're initiated into something more. Before, they were like everyone else. Before, they were like the crowds, just going along for the ride. But after this point, after Christ reveals himself, they're changed. They start to become obsessed with much deeper questions. Likewise for us, as we sit here, as this question is asked to us tonight, at the beginning of Pascha, my response to that question is what dictates and happens in the rest of my life. Then something very strange happens. Christ says to them, okay, you've realized I'm the Messiah, but don't tell anyone about this. Tell no one. Tell no one. Why? After Peter says to Jesus, when Jesus says to him, who do you say that I am? Peter says, you are the Messiah. Then Jesus, in the text, begins to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things. He tells them, the Messiah has come, yes, and you've recognized me as the Messiah, but the Messiah must be crucified. He must be slaughtered. He must be die. He must die. He must be scourged. He must be mocked. He must be humiliated. And then Peter does something very strange. I don't know if you've ever noticed it. He pulls Jesus aside and begins to rebuke him. He just said that he's the Messiah. Now he begins to rebuke Jesus. Christ then does something very interesting in return. He stops, and it says very specifically, he turns and looks each one of his disciples intently in the eye. Every single one of them looks them all intently in the eye. And then says, get behind me, Satan. You are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. This is a very, very shocking statement. Jesus is calling Peter or identifying Peter with Satan. This would not be preserved in the Gospels if the apostles didn't recognize just how important this is, because this was something deeply embarrassing for Peter. Can you imagine? Pope Shenouda is sitting there and then Christ says to him, get behind me, Satan. We would never record that in history, ever, unless it was something to be considered extremely important for the church. Get behind me, Satan. Why would he say that? Because Peter recognized that Jesus was the Messiah. He knew that he was the Messiah. But something was wrong. His understanding wasn't perfect. It was off. He wanted Christ to be his kind of Messiah. The kind of Messiah that comes in, restores Israel, destroys the enemies, gets rid of the Romans, gives them everything, puts Peter at the right hand, gives him a nice judge role. But that's not the Christ that Christ is. St. Peter creates a Messiah in his mind and tries to force Jesus to be that mold, tries to fit Jesus into that mold. He doesn't want a Messiah that's going to die. He doesn't want a Messiah that's going to be crucified. He doesn't want a Messiah that's going to suffer. He wants a different type of Messiah. He's got his own Messiah. And so for Christ, the second he hears those words, that he rebukes him, that St. Peter can't handle the fact that Jesus is the Messiah, but he's the Messiah that has come to die for all of humanity, Christ turns to him and says, get behind me, Satan. You don't understand the things of God. You only understand the things of men. It's something very, very powerful. But those words, they come much stronger back at us. Much stronger back at us. St. Gregory of Nazianzus says, unless only that which is assumed can be saved. If Christ didn't take upon himself everything that we are, then we can't be saved. So Christ is saying to St. Peter, I've come not only to give you some satisfaction that you recognize the Messiah. I've come to take upon myself everything. Sin, death, abandonment, brokenness, darkness, temptation, weakness, hunger, thirst. If I don't take upon myself all of these things, even to the point of a violent death upon the cross, then I can't save you. I can't save you. But Peter can't handle that. He can't handle that. Who do you say that I am? Peter answered the question correctly by his words, but in his heart he was mistaken. And that's precisely what we do. Who do you say that I am? This question stands at the center of the Gospels. It's the most important question of the Gospels, at the center of our lives. Not who do others say that I am. Who do you, in your life, with your life, say that I am? Do we recreate him like Peter? I think I may have told you guys a story once before of a young monk. He was a very holy monk. And When he entered the monastery, all he wanted was to feel the grace of God. All he wanted to do was feel the light of God, was to have gifts and the spiritual things and see visions and see light. And so one day he was sitting there, and he was a hermit, and he was sitting in his cell, and then the light went off. His candle blew out. And he was, at the time, he was knitting like a basket with a needle. And so he couldn't find the needle. And then at that point, because his understanding was off, a little candle got lit. And a little cherub, a little angel, came and lit a light in front of him. And he found the candle, and he found the needle, and he picked it up. He said, "Oh, thank you, God, finally. Finally, you've revealed to me the mysteries. Finally, I'm at that level where I get to see things, where you're taking care of me, where supernatural things are happening." And it continued like this for a week. The devil was slowly playing with him, giving things, until eventually the devil said to him, listen, tomorrow I want you to make yourself ready. There's going to be a chariot coming from heaven. There's going to be angels, there's going to be legions, and you're going to find Christ at the head. And when that happens, don't open your mouth. Just come and worship." And him thinking that he was finally about to see Christ, went and did that and bowed down before the chariot. Didn't do the sign of cross, didn't discern. Thought that he was entitled to see Christ. The next day they came to the Eucharist. And he said to them, "Where were you? How come you didn't come to the liturgy? Where were you? We didn't see you there." And he already said to them, he said, "I don't need to anymore. I don't need to have the body and the blood. I've seen Christ." St. Macarius said, "Okay, no worries. Monks, go and grab him, tie him, put him to a pole and beat him. Strip him naked and beat him. And do that for a week until he comes to his senses." And that was the only way that St. Macarius could break this delusion that the monk was under. Why did this happen? Wasn't he doing everything right? Wasn't he living in a monastery? Wasn't he living an ascetic life? Yeah. But the Messiah he wanted wasn't the true Messiah. The Messiah he wanted was the Messiah that gave him something else. The Messiah that he molded in his own mind. The Christ that he molded in his own mind. Do we recreate like Peter? Do we turn Christ, and this is very important for us, do we turn him into a vending machine in the sky? Do we turn him into a vending machine that I say what I want, when I want, how I want, and then he has to give me that? And if he doesn't, then I grumble. Then I grumble. Do I want a happy, clappy Christianity where God gives me money, gives me wealth, gives me health, gives me prosperity? Or maybe I see Christ as a Messiah that is uninvolved. I know he exists. I know I'm in his church. I know I'm doing everything kind of that he wants me to do, but he doesn't really care. He doesn't care what I do. He doesn't care what I don't do. He's just there. He's happy for me to come to church every now and then. He's not that involved. He's not that fussed about what I do. He's only here on a Sunday. Or maybe I want Christ, but I want Christ on different terms. I want him only there when I need him. And when I don't need him, I put him in the closet. When I want him, I turn the light on. When I don't want him, I turn the light off. I can go a year, fine. And then I get a bit sick. And when I'm sick, I start begging him. And I've forgotten about him 2 years before. And then I'm better. And then I forget about him. I need a job, so I run to him. Then the job goes away. I have the job. And then I forget about him. And I go through this cycle in my life. But is that the true Christ? Or is that a Christ I'm creating in my head? St. Andrew of Crete says, we no longer fashion idols with our hand. We no longer create idols with our hand. We don't make a Baal out of gold and stick him out and put fire underneath him and start worshipping him. We fashion idols in our minds. We create a God that doesn't exist. We create a Christ that doesn't exist. And this is exactly what St. Peter is doing. And at that point, Christ says to him, get behind me, Satan. You don't understand what I'm here to do. You have no idea what I'm doing. Christ is the suffering Son of Man. He comes to pour himself out for humanity. He comes to consume and trample upon death with his life. And that means if we're Christians, if we're followers of Christ, which is what Christians means, then we need to worship Christ as he is. And that means our response to the words, who do you personally, with your life, with your actions, with your behavior, with your whole being, say that I am? We say, you are the Christ that has come to die for us. And that means us as Christians, we follow in his path. The next words in the gospel are these. Whoever desires from Christ, whoever desires to come after him, after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross and follow me. If I can't understand Christ without understanding those words, if I look at Christ and I don't hear those words, if I look at Christ and imagine that he's given me a beautiful house, he's given me a beautiful family, he's given me beautiful kids, he gives me perfect health, he gives me absolute prosperity, he gives me everything I want, and I don't hear those words, then I've created a Christ in my head. He's not the true Christ. What Christ wants is for us to understand that he is God who has emptied himself, who has humiliated himself, who has given himself out of complete self-giving love to redeem his people. And that means to pass through there, he needs to go through the cross. And that means for him to undo my brokenness, to take away my darkness, to restore, to heal, to redeem me, he needs to pass through the cross. And that means for me to live in that resurrection, to live in that light, to live in that joy, to live in that healing, I myself need to pass through the cross. I need to pass through my own suffering. I need to endure my own kind of suffering. This is extremely, extremely important. Who do you say that I am? If my answer to that single, needful, absolute question is anything otherwise, you pick your Christ. There's about 7,000. And you can find them worshipped in a lot of different churches. If you are one of those, but not the true Christ, then I stand myself first to be rebuked like Peter. So let us in our lives, in our search, in our struggle, in our movement towards that answer, let us always cleave to Christ. Let us always look at him and remember him. This is our God. The person that will empty himself and give himself and completely sacrifice himself, completely exhaust himself for our sakes. For our sakes. Can we not then turn around and say to him, my Lord, can I not sacrifice myself? Can I not self-give? Can I not humble myself? Can I not accept to be wronged? Can I not accept to be harmed? Can I not accept to turn the cheek? Can I not accept to be humiliated? Can I not accept the suffering that is in front of me, whether it's mental, physical, at any point in my life? Because the degree to which I bear that, the degree to which I bear my cross, like my Christ, is the degree to which I can say to him, truly, O Lord, who do you say that I am? You are the Christ. You are the Christ. The one that's come to redeem. The one that's come to give life. The one that's come to give joy. May God give us all to truly think about that question tonight. To truly focus on that question and to have that question redeem us. To have that question, like I did for the disciples, to be a transition point in their lives. To be a point of transformation in their lives. A time where they move from incomprehension to comprehension. A time when they move from darkness to light. A time when they move from brokenness to healing. But we have to answer that question. We have to answer that question. Glory be to God.